I'm Lance Carter, and you're listening to the Daily Actor Interview Podcast. Hey guys, welcome back. Today I'm talking with Ernie Hudson, and I promise you, you're going to like this interview. Ernie's been in a million TV shows and films. He's been on Broadway. He's done it all. And it's great to hear someone of his stature be so candid. He talks about how he got his start, the worst non-acting job he's ever had, some great advice to actors, and so much more.
How did you get your start?
I grew up in Michigan, and in a small town, southwestern corner of Michigan, Benton Harbor. And then through a series of, just life changes, ended up at Wayne State University and discovered theater there and just fell in love with it and started, acting back in, 67, somewhere around there, and, worked in Detroit. Got a scholarship to Yale after I graduated from Wayne State, and went there and came out to Hollywood and did a film with Gordon Parks. Went to the University of Minnesota for a while because my wife at the time was working on her degree, and then when that marriage ended, me and my two sons came out to California, and we just got a little place and did what actors do. That's a kind of a, but basically, I had got into college and was really trying hard to find what my grandmother raised me and wanted me to find a good job, and I really tried the good job thing. I did a lot of different things, and finally, never really felt comfortable until I walked in the theater one night and saw a play, and I just thought, I just felt at home. And I think it was the first, when I did my first play, I just felt I knew how to do that. I think all the jobs I had, I always felt like they're going to fire me at any minute, and if they don't, they should fire me at any minute, whereas this, I really felt, okay, this is, I can do this.
Yeah. What was the worst real job that you had?
Well, probably the worst job I had, actually, while I was in high school, I was working in a foundry, foundry and a factory. Factory is kind of a nice place where they put things together, but a foundry is where they, they pour the hot iron and the smoke and the dirt and the, it's really hard. Uh-huh. My brother got me a job there when I was in my senior year of high school. And so I'd leave school at noon, and I would meet him, and we'd drive up, and I worked from 3 to midnight. And my job was shoveling dirt. It was a room that was filled with this black dirt that they'd use for the molding machine. And they had a conveyor belt that just kept going continuously. And so I had to shovel this dirt for 9 hours a day, filling these things up. And it was, and you never had the satisfaction of filling anything up because the conveyor belt just kept going, and you were just shoveling all day. They wouldn't give me the time off for my high school graduation. I quit, and I went and joined the Marine Corps. And then they gave me that little pamphlet that said, sure, if you work so much time, you get so much vacation time.
Yeah.
And I really would have to be 60 years old and be able to get 4 weeks off, So, and something about the reality of that is like, I don't think so. Yeah. There's got to be a better way. But that was probably the worst job I ever did. I would go, and then the next day I would be blowing, sneezing out all this black dirt that would, you had those little face masks, you'd still, the dirt would somehow get in your nostrils, and it was pretty bad. And the funny part was, I did it because I did it for the money, but I don't remember ever using the money to buy anything of any kind of importance, so I would have, I'm sure, enjoyed my senior year in high school a lot more had I not been doing that. But any rate, we do what we do.
Well, that does sound
probably the job that should have been the job that should have been a great job was I was hired while I was in college by the Michigan Bell Telephone Company to be a communications consultant and to go to companies that were starting up and create a phone system for them, and you know, and so they trained us, and I went out and they gave me a little company car, and you know, I got to wear a tie, and I had a secretary, and I would meet these people and talk about their business and design a system and arrange to have them put in. The problem is I was really awful. I was just really bad. And they would call me up. It's like, it's 8 o'clock, and we, you know, there's no phones here. Where are our phones? And I forgot to put the thing in, and it was just really bad. So... And that was finally the good job that my grandmother just was excited about. But I'm like, you know what? I'm not good at this. I don't think it's going to last long.
So it's a good thing acting worked out.
It's a good thing acting worked out. I just felt like, oh, God, what can I do? It's one of those times when you say those prayers, like, I got to do something. I mean, I had a wife. I had kids. I got to find something that I can do. And I found... I took an acting class just as an elective, just for something to do, and just loved it, you know. That was I don't know how many years ago, 45 or so years back. You know,
when I was telling people that I was going to talk to you, I got comments like, "Oh, I love him," and "Oh, he's the greatest." And you seem to universally be well liked. You know, even with all the sort of authoritative figures that you play, you always seem to have this warmth about you.
Oh well, that's I appreciate that. Because, you know, you never know how. And I played some characters that were just really not particularly good
people.
But
yeah.
I think that, you know, I think that the characters that I've tried to create are people who are just dealing with light stuff, as opposed to guys who are locked in their own, you know, idea of what they are and what the world is. You know, in other words, they're not a black character who's just going, you know, this, you know, I'm this person and the world is like this. I mean, they're guys who are just doing their jobs and doing the best that they know how to do, which is what I think at the end of the day most of us are doing, just trying to make sense out of it all.
I want to read something that you said. You said, "I'm an actor and I love working, and I kind of take what's there. I know this sounds a little off, but every time I start trying to control it, play the game, change my look, cut my hair, buy a new wardrobe because that's what they're wearing, it never works out."
Yeah, that's been, I kept thinking that, you know, if I just find the right thing, then they'll love me, and they'll give me this great thing, and then I'll make millions of dollars, and my life will change. That's never been, I'm a working actor. It's never been my, so far, now, not to say it can't happen, but, and God knows, I've tried everything. I've grown beards, I've shaved my head, I've done all this stuff, and you kind of go, but it's working for him, why doesn't it work for me? And so, I just work, you see other people and you kind of go, geez, I wonder how he got that. I mean, I thought I did whatever, but it just, I find it's the best not to question it too much.
Yeah. Well, you seem to be working constantly, film, TV, theater, you've done a lot of guest star work. How do you pick your projects?
Well, pretty much, I mean, it's sort of what's there. I mean, it's not like it's a ton of stuff. You know, I call Maiden and says, give me a movie now. I'm ready to do a movie. And, it's like, you know, I'm like, dude, what's happening? Is there anything going on? He says, well, you know, there's this one little thing. There's this Doomby thing or whatever. And then you read it and you kind of go, and most of the things, there have been things that I kind of go, you know what, I don't want to do that. But you know, you sort of what's there. I did a play last year on Broadway, the one the Obamas came to see, called Joe Turner's Come and Gone, and it was a fun role, and I had a great time, you know, doing that. But it wasn't like I was looking to do, you know, a Broadway play. It just happened to, you know, and in my business, it happens very fast. You know, I got a call, and it's on a Tuesday, and we start rehearsal on a Friday, you know, in New York. So, you know, you don't plan too much. Sometimes you get a movie way ahead of schedule, but generally speaking, and I think one of the downsides of when people see it from a racial point of view is the characters become very limited. And so what you want to do is just say, well, you know, there's no reason why this guy can't be this or that, because when that happens, the amount of work is, you know, like me being the average dad, you know, me being just, you know, just doing one of the hundreds of roles out there, unless it specifically says black, it's sometimes hard to get the casting director to say, wait a minute, you know, I can do that. Why not? So, you know, just finding those, you know, those parts. And, you know, things that, you know, are always changing, getting better, whatever. But then also when you get things like IMDb that list your age, it's kind of hard to say you're in your 30s, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, they'll put me in a casting session with, you know, a bunch of old guys. I'm like, I'm not here, guys. I mean, you know, these are old people. And then, you know, so you're almost too old to be young and too young to be old. So,
well, I'm not quite sure how old you are, but you look almost exactly the same as when you did Ghostbusters to now. I mean,
you
must have some sort of picture in the attic or something like Dorian Gray.
Well, I've just been very fortunate. And, of course, I mean, when I look at Ghostbusters, I see, wow, that was, like, you know, almost 30 years ago. And I've been, you know, and I don't feel physically, you know, diminished in any way. I mean, but on the other hand, what casting directors see is, you know, we never see ourselves the way other people see us. So.
Yeah.
And also, I think when people know your age, it's kind of hard to. I do a show called Secret Life of the American Teenager, and I have a little romantic scene with Dawn Lewis, who's playing my wife. But then, you know, people are like, oh my God, they look at his age. Oh my God, he's too old. What, you know, whatever. So it's just hope people just, you know, the roles are there and the roles are interesting. And it really doesn't matter about the age thing, but I realize some people do take it. You know, take it a certain way.
Do you still have to audition?
Oh yeah. No, it's that sort of. Even though now, you know, I think the difference after all the years I've been doing it, it's hard for me to kind of get up to that. I mean, they'll say, and sometimes not even for things that are that particularly interesting. I said, we want him to come and read. Now go read what? There's only a few lines here. I mean, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to say? I mean, but yeah, they'll ask me to come and read for the stupidest stuff. I mean, you know, whatever. So now what I do is I have one of those flip cameras, and I'll say, you know, if you really want that, I'll put it on camera and I'll send it to you, because I'm not driving into town. And that's one of the hardest things, I think, for actors is you go. You know, my agent will say, okay, they want you to read. It's only 8 pages of dialogue, and it's not that big a deal. I'm going, no, but you understand, I have to study the character. So between now and the 2 days that I have, I'm spending my life trying to get on top of this and make sense out of this thing. And when I go in and audition and don't get the job, I've just wasted two days. And then if it comes, you know, I've gone on things where I've gone into 5 interviews and didn't get the job. And then you really feel like an idiot. So it, so now I put it on tape and I send it in and they can do what they want. So that's a little bit better thanks to technology.
Yeah.
But yeah, people still want you to read. And I'm sure there's some actors who it's all about perception. There's some actors who I'm sure, but unfortunately, not many. I've gone to interviews and I've seen people who I never would have thought would be there to read for some TV show, you know. But that's, you know, the nature of the game. And I have to keep reminding myself that, you know, there's no guarantee. I mean, that's part of, you know, what you make that decision that this is, you know, you got to fight for the roles. And this is the way it's always been. It hasn't changed.
How do you go about breaking down a scene or approaching a character? What's your sort of initial process?
Well, you know, first, you know, you read a character, you read a movie, or you take a scene, and I just really, I think with every character, there's an intuitive knowingness. You kind of know. I mean, I can research it, I can think, and I can, you know, I mean, every line in the show will tell you kind of where the character's coming from and give you a clue of who he is. Sometimes the script will give you some information. A lot of times, most of the time, it doesn't. So you kind of have to, how do I make this, is this person in this movie, is he a real person, and where is he coming from? How did he get here? Where is he going? You know, who are these people? What's, you know, what is, you know, it's almost like these sort of chance encounters we have in everyday life. I mean, you go to the gas station, you know, and you pay the guy your money and you, you know, exchange a few words. He's just a guy in a gas station, but in reality, he's a real person.
Yeah.
I mean, he's really important. So how do we bring his history? Now, it's great if you're the guy getting the gas and because the movie's about you. But if you're the guy who's working in a gas station, that's the only moment you have. And so how do I bring a complete person as opposed to me just saying a couple lines and we say, oh, that's Ernie Hudson in the movie. And so, you know, you hope that the character is a part of the story because ultimately I think I'm a storyteller and I believe in the story. Now, that has not served me as well as, because I have some active friends who don't care about the story. It's about their moment. And so you make the whole, even if you're the service station guy, you make it, now it's about the service station guy. But a lot of times that takes away from the story. And I believe that you commit to the story. And that, so if the character has to be vulnerable to make the story work, then that's, you know, you don't go, I'm just going to do my thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, you got to be, I think you should be true to the story, to the fellow actors and everything. So just finding the heart of the character and, you know, and trying to give him some history. And so, yeah, so I kind of, you know, so it's an intuitive thing. And then you kind of get into, and you know, why is, it just has, that moment has to make sense to me at some level. And if he's in a line of work that I'm not familiar with, then you got to do some, at least enough research to get a sense of what it's like to be an accountant. You know, now if you know some accountants, so you've, you know, sort of experienced that before, then you don't. But if you've never really been in an accounting office, like where he works at, it helps to just get a sense. So, you know, that world is a real world to you.
Yeah.
You know, if you're playing a boxer but you've never been in a gym, then, you know, we can fake it because we've seen things on TV, but it's nice to go and visit a gym, you know, work out a few times. I mean, just to get a sense of what that would really be like.
Uh-huh.
And but unfortunately, I think most actors sort of draw their research from looking at TV and films. You know, and sometimes, you know, you have no choice. I'm not going to, me and Leonardo DiCaprio, when we did Basketball Diaries, we talked about, and I'm not going to get high, you know, to, I'm not going to take heroin to see what the character's feeling, you know, but I can, you know, yeah, but I'll go as far as I can go to try and get a sense of that world and who that guy is because there's some people have jobs that I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
And I think that helps. All those little things, anything that you can bring into to just make that moment, you know, an honest moment is helpful.
So what's your advice to actors?
My advice now really is a little bit, it's changed in the last few years. And
oh, yeah?
I think that, I think it's trying to get it, it seems like it's moving to a point where it's almost a hobby as opposed to a profession. Before I would say, okay, you know, obviously you still got to do, you got to build a foundation. I mean, you got to really take the time to really study craft, to really know, to just know so that you're not, you know, in a work situation learning, you know what I mean? You need to know, and if you're not working, then take classes, do whatever you can to get that foundation so you're grounded, and you get the confidence in knowing that, you know, you're getting hired because you're good at what you do as opposed to, you know, they think you got a cute smile or whatever, you know, because if you get a job based on those things, when the job is over, you don't have the confidence to go and get the next job, and you won't be doing it for a long time. But where it's changed, I say study your craft, but also find a way to share an ownership. I mean, a lot of the jobs I've done as favors and for free, I would say, you know what, you need to participate on some level if you want to make a living, because now everybody's crying the blues about the economy and nobody has any money. I'm like, well, wait a minute, how do I now, you know, buy the home that I want to have? How do I send my kids to college? How do I have a life? And with theater, I saw a change back in the early days. I mean, you could make, especially if you did play on Broadway, I mean, you could really make a living. And then it got to a point where you almost have to pay them to do a play. So so now film, you know, that you would pay $500,000 are saying we only got $20,000. You're like, yeah. Whoa. So I think it's about ownership. So if the movie does well, you can participate. And a lot of times they'll say we have no money, they'll get an actor to work for scale, and then the movie does huge numbers and the actor doesn't make any more money. So so learn how to either write or produce, because if you're writing, the writers are a little more protected than we as actors are, so you're going to be level. But producing, finding stories that you want to tell. And some people say, well, and I don't like directing. I'm not one of those people who like that kind of control. But find a way to participate. So if you're doing a favor to a friend, to say, hey, you know, and have it in writing that if the movie makes, you know, $500,000, I get, you know, I get something, you know, because, you know, you almost have to be subsidized just to do it.
Yeah, true.
And I have friends who live in New York and, you know, they're paying, you know, that high rent and they're trying to go to auditions and do all that stuff. And how do you do that when you're paying? I got an offer to do a play a few months back at the Crossroads Theaters. I was paying $600 a week. I mean, what can I do on $600? And they're taking tax.
Yeah.
And it's like, you got to find a way to make a living. And this is America, and ownership is what it's about. Uh-huh. So, you know, participate and tell your own story. And a lot of times people say to this, well, my kids decided to be an actor, but I tell him to, you know, get his degree in dentistry or something. So I'm like, you know what? Find some area of the business that you can still be in the business, you know, but you may not be making your living as an actor, but you still know how to run sound, or you still know how to set lights, or you still know how to do something, you know. So but definitely I would say be involved in, you know, in the creative process on some level. If you can write, that's great, because I think stories are what's needed. But just being a straight up actor, it's just it's a real shot in the dark. It always was a shot in the dark, but I think even more so now.
Yeah.
Because in the old days, if you worked at all, you made money. That was a great thing. But I don't care what you did in the business, you were the caterer. Everybody made money, and it was a good business to be in. Now it's like a few people make all the money, and the rest are just doing favors. So, you know, if you're going to do a favor, let somebody do a favor for you.
So now you're in a new film called Doonby.
Yeah, Doonby is it's a cute film. I read the story and love the story. And John Snyder, who did his TV show Dukes of Hazzard years ago, and we worked on Secret Life of the American Teenager together. He played a doctor. I played a psychiatrist. He's no longer on that show. But I read the script, loved the script, and you know, it's about relationships, how we impact the lives of people in ways that we can never know. And I think the movie sort of shows, you know, the possibility. So it's kind of mystical, and it was just a really interesting story. And I really like John a lot, and I play a character who's a blues man, so I love that quality to begin with. And a guy who made the decision to come off the road, which he loves, to, you know, to have a life with a woman that he loves. And so he opens a local bar and invites all of his blues buddies to come and play there. And but he's a guy who really appreciates the fact that he gets a chance to live. And you know, and he befriends the Doonby character and gives him a job, and find out that he's also a musician. And so it was a fun character to play.
Yeah. Do you play your own instruments?
Well, you know, in the movie I play a saxophone, and I don't really play saxophone, but I did a movie back in 79 called Crazy Times, and Michael Paré, David Caruso, and Ray Liotta were three kids growing up in New York, and I was a saxophone player who was kind of a mentor. They would come and I'd sort of give them advice, and Warner Brothers, who did the movie, gave me about a month saxophone lessons so I could, so I learned how to play the scales, but I can at least be convincing playing the horn.
Oh, wow.
So I kind of do the same thing here. I remember those lessons.
It all came back to you.
Yeah, you know, and I probably would have kept playing, but they gave me an instructor who I found out later was actually very jealous that he didn't get the part. So the better I got, the more he tried to destroy my confidence. So it was a good thing on one hand. I learned to play the scales. On the other hand, I realized that this guy was sort of undermining me. So
he tried to destroy your saxophone career.
Yeah, you know, and I think because I got so cocky with it, and he was like, oh, so you think you can do what I do, and I've been doing this my whole life, and who do you think you are, and here, do this, and he would do something outrageous on the horn, and of course I couldn't do it. I mean, I'm just, so he took all the fun out of it, but then finally I didn't realize that he had been up for the part, you know, and he didn't get it, so why they would get him to teach me, I have no idea, but...
How long after did you find out that he was up for the part? Like after you finished?
Well, yeah, right about the end of our month of lessons, I finally got it. Like, well, dude, what is your problem? He said, hey, man, I went up for that role, and I didn't get it. And when he really, you know, that moment when the guy tells you exactly what he thinks of you, and he's been wanting to do it for a long time. And I was, like, shocked. I'm like, oh, okay. I had a dance up front. I did a Fantasy Island, and I had a dance that I had to do. And one of the guy who was up for the role that I was up for, who was a real dancer, but he had been a friend, and I didn't realize he had been up for the part. And so he was giving me some not lessons, but we were working on some things, and suddenly he just came out with this diatribe of how... You know, they should have gotten a dancer, should have got an actor who could dance, and I'm like, oh, wow, this is my friend, and I realized that it's a very competitive business.
Yeah.
But I do remember how to do the scales on the saxophone, so hopefully this will look fine.
Well, when we all see the movie, we'll look at your saxophone.
<That's right. laughs> Yeah.
Thanks, Ernie, and thank you for listening. Keep coming back to dailyactor.com, and don't forget to tell your friends about us. I'm Lance, and I'll talk to you soon.